Welcome, everyone, to The Peaceful Planet. This is your show host, Marcia McMahon, and we have a very special show arranged for you today. We're going to have Dennis McMahon with us. We are no relation, but, of course, we promote oneness on this show, and as we are all one, we happen to share the last name. That's pretty cool. Now, I want to point out our music that you've been listening to is The Peaceful Planet Mix by Chris Moores. Actually, there's a story behind the music, and I think a lot of you that listen to this show regularly know that I channel John Lennon, as well Princess Diana, and many other greats from Britain, from the other side. And the music that we're producing is being synthesized from spirit through the mediumship of the great Bob Murray. You can hear his songs at thestarsstillshine.com. And the song that we played today was a mix of my lyrics and Bob's tunes called The Peaceful Planet, which is our show theme. And John would like to, he has some messages for us today at the start of the show before we introduce Dennis McMahon's wonderful book, Journey into the Mystic. And we're also, I'm going to be reading a few messages from John. And then we have something really special for our guest today. A good friend of mine sent me some MP3 files that were converted from whatever, I don't know, the older format, you know, whether it was, I think it was on a radio show where he had live recordings of John Lennon talking about peace. And since our show and its title were channeled in from John, that's where I got the idea for the show title from him, from this song. We're going to listen to the real John Lennon in life today at the Starter Show. And I would like you guys, all of the listeners out there, to tune in to some of the messages I'm going to read from John, as I normally do. I read a message from Spirit, either Diana or John, and would encourage you also to visit my website at Diana Speaks to the World. I've got a lot of messages from the Ascended Masters up on the site, including some from John and some paintings of John as well as of Diana. So I'm going to open the show as we tune to Spirit and ask the angels and the archangels and all those spirit guides that watch over us, including John Lennon, who's saying he's in the upstairs studio right now with George, and Princess Di and the archangels to watch over everyone on the program and inspire our words with love and healing for the world, peace for the world, and as well all of our listeners, sending out special healing and blessings to all of you, and including our guest, Dennis. All right, so I'm going to be reading this older message that I've been looking through messages from John, and I thought this one really rang true about John and his feelings and so on about the situation of creating music on our show and his thoughts on peace, etc. So I have two messages to read. This one will be brief. It's on Ascension, titled John on Ascension. I wanted to ask you about whether I should include your messages in my Ascended Masters pages on the website in your own name, John. John, oh, that again. Well, as far as being an Ascended Master, I don't wish to be worshipped or put on any religious pedestal. You all know my feeling about religion being a big problem on this planet. My idea is to bring oneness and unity through music, as always. I am aware of the ascension process for the whole planet, yeah. All of us who were stood for peace and love on the planet were leading the way toward ascension, even in the 60s with the Beatles music we did. Of course I am of the ascension movement, but please don't call on me as an ascended master, because that would have connotations of people calling on me for protection and other things. And frankly, I do work with a number of enlightened souls on the earth plane, but mainly my focus is for peace, Marcia, my dear. So we'll leave it at that for now. Though since arriving here, of course, I'm made aware of there being a God and a wonderful afterlife. We now work with the ascension energies, and of course, Diana is a master in her own right, as are others that you work with. We are all working on this big planet together to bring about peace before it's too late, you know. We'll be listening in the upstairs studio, and we want to congratulate you on your new time slot and show. We're going to rock and roll the Beatles, and we hope all the best for Blog In Service, BBS Radio, and those wonderful light workers, Don, and others who are behind it. Ciao for now. Love you, John. And then I wanted to share another message that I had. Now, I'd like you guys to kind of tune in to the voice of John Lennon. We're going to play it in just a second, but here's another message that I've never shared with the audience before. And this is very brief, and this one is very special because this was the 25th anniversary where John Lennon had been assassinated, unfortunately, in New York, and there's a commemorative ceremony going on in New York at Strawberry Fields there in the park, and he commented on that and actually kind of gave me a message, an impression of what he looks like on the other side. And what his thoughts are about the anniversary, world peace, and so on. So it's just very brief. Hey, it's me, John. I'm showing you now how I look. You see, no scars, no fear. My hair is shorter, and I'm clean-shaven. I do look every bit myself, but in spirit, not in form. We're quite excited to be on your show, Marcia. Don't worry too much about Yoko. She's all for world peace, and when she does hear from you, she's going to love you. We wish to say thanks to all my fans for all the good times. We want to ask people to open their hearts to Bob Murray's music and to say that it's really mine through Bob, and to say your lyrics are really mine through you. Your lyrics were good but not complete. We hope to do more with you in Rock and Roll Beatles once again. Imagine peace. Imagine love. Soon your world will eventually get this message, and we'll all be on our way to ascension. Child, John, P.S. Diana says she loves you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So anyway, with those words, I was stunned because this good friend of mine, my chiropractor, Dr. Todd Austin, sent me some real audio files of John and his thoughts on peace. And I think you'll be astounded to hear John Lennon give his thoughts to you on peace. And then we're going to open after that with anyone's comments. You can call in the station and Dennis can give his comments, and then we'll get right into Dennis's wonderful book and his work. So, Don, if you could, I'd like you to play the clip titled John on Peace in an MP3 file format. And the credits, as I understand it, this was an MP3 file that was converted from a live radio show by my friend. And I understand at the end of this that this was was Elliot Mitz who did the interview. But I don't know anything more about the whereabouts of that. So just enjoy and listen for John.
Our outlook is be yourself. Use your full potential. Don't believe anybody that says you're no good. You can really do what you want. We're all infinite, and we have infinite possibilities. Give peace a chance. Remember love. Get it together. Come together. Do everything together, but you must be yourself first. Don't compromise. Be yourself, and nature will provide.
We've been talking. We've done a lot on life, your thoughts on different parts of life. How do you feel? How do you think about death? Does it bother you? Do you worry about
it? No, I'm looking forward to death, you know. Death is a rebirth. And I'm looking forward to it as much as I suppose I look forward to being born. You know, and it might have a few physical pains as you pass over. Maybe not, you know. But I'm looking forward to it. I don't want to be killed. I'm looking forward to a natural death.
What about just the prospect of getting old in this life?
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. You know, I really will enjoy being old. Because you do have the experience, and if you use it wisely, you can help the young. And as long as you don't get too narrow, you know. We both have visions of a quaint little cottage by the seashore, and us looking at our old movies and saying, remember, the bed in, and the world will be peaceful. And if the world isn't peaceful when we die, if world peace isn't a reality when we die, we'll probably be back to try again. We'll have to keep doing it till we get it, you know. So we'll be back. No, we won't be back because we're going to get world peace.
Now, whether John has been back, we can only guess. But the acorn of peace he and Yoko planted in the world's war-torn consciousness at the end of the savage 60s seems to show some signs of life in the not-so-nasty 90s. No doubt he'd be proud about that. Because in the end, more than for the Beatles or his tunes or guitar licks or anything else, John Ono Lennon wanted to be remembered as a peacemaker.
We were right to heaven together. We did it. We proved it. Success, winning, life, and happiness.
With that, we turn the page on Lennon's Spiritual Development Revisited Part 4. Hope you enjoyed our latest trip through John's mind and music. Looking forward to being with you next time. For the Lost Lennon Tapes, I'm Elliot Mintz.
All right, so I hope our listeners enjoyed listening to John Lennon. We didn't get to hear the clip, so Dennis, did you hear any of that at all?
Very little. I only heard the Imagine clip at the end.
Yeah, but I did listen to it a couple of times, and I know what our listeners heard. And it's amazing to me because for me it was it corroborated my work even more so. Not that I doubt that I'm channeling him, but he's always saying in these messages, imagine peace, imagine love. And then at part of that clip, I think you heard that, remember peace, remember love, as he put it. And he said, you know, be yourself and remember that you're infinite. So to me, a lot of this just was 100% a confirmation for me because I had never heard the Lost Lennon tapes before. Just last night I heard them for the first time. And we're going to be featuring that on my show in coming weeks. We're going to cover that and have a special message. So, you know, we're getting a lot of good information coming from all these sources. Now, as far as I know, this was remastered by my chiropractor, Dr. Austin, and the announcer gave his name at the end as Elliot Mitz, and he played a little clip of Imagine, but it was done from some radio show. Don't know the other sources. But, Dennis, thank you for your patience. And I wish we could discuss it a little bit more because I know...
Well, I'd like to take off on what you said. You said, remember that you are infinite. I think that's a big part of what getting into spirituality is all about, and it's what I try to convey in my book. I mean, we come down to this planet, we incarnate, and it's kind of like we come down a little bit open as kids, and then Western society shuts us down, mm-hmm. and then if you want to get a little bit more spiritual, it is remembering that you are infinite, that we are really spirits in our most basic nature, and that this is a human experience, but we lose sight of that because it's such a heavy experience down here. You forget
infinite,
that you are
though.
Infinite. So that message to remember that you are infinite rings true to me.
Well, you know, I have to give out your website and say I want to give our listeners a real endorsement for your book. And
thank you so much.
Is journeyintothemystic.com, and the name of the book is Into the Mystic. And Dennis has written the most hilarious and fun adventure into the metaphysical realms that you guys will ever read. And, you know, for those of us that are already mediums and channels and understand this, we all have a slightly different journey, but Dennis's is really hilarious. And I want to read his bio here. He says, after experiencing what he would later describe as spontaneous mystical events, Dennis became deeply involved in seeking explanations through shamanism, past life regression, communications with the dead, and the like. Part of his process is to share what he has perceived and learned, reflecting the tradition of sharing practice for thousands of years among members of indigenous societies who recognize that the sharing of mystical experience benefits the human condition. Dennis has also authored the underground novel Street Fighting Man under the pen name Dennis Jones. As one reviewer put it, the mystical power of rock and roll and its capacity to heal the damaged spirit come alive in Street Fighting Man, a debut novel by Dennis Jones. So I've got to read that one, too, after reading Into the Mystic, but I must confess I didn't get all the way through your book, although it was very hard to put the book down. I had it in a PDF file on my computer last night, and we had tornadoes for 5 straight hours last night, and
wow.
Fortunately nothing touched down, but I was down in my little dungeon of a basement. But
I'm going to have to send you a hard copy then.
Pardon me?
I'm going to have to send you a hard copy of the book.
Oh, well, that's okay. Not to worry. I really thought it was great, and I loved your comments about being infinite. What a great way to launch into this discussion of your book, and I think when you open to spirit, you suddenly realize that you can access something that I call infinite intelligence, which is the divine creator. And I feel that the infinite intelligence becomes more and more available as we dare to journey. But the journey for you started out in the most uncanny of ways, didn't it?
Yes. My son Ryan was 2 weeks old when he passed away, essentially as a result of medical malpractice. And at the time, my grief was overwhelming, and I wasn't able to visit his grave ever and had never done so until 15 years later when my godmother died. And I went to her funeral which was being held in the same graveyard in Calvary out on Long Island here, where Ryan was also buried. And while I was attending my godmother's funeral, I distinctly felt someone or something basically calling me to his grave. And I didn't go that day, but I returned a week later, one foggy morning at sunrise, as I got out of a Stephen King novel. And it was all quite emotional for me. And while I was at Ryan's grave, I had a very clear vision of him appearing to me out of the cosmos, it seemed, looking to be the teenager he would have been had he survived his ordeal on Earth. And he asked me, "What's the matter, Dad?" And I cried out, "I'm sorry, I never visited your grave before." And he goes, "That's all right, Dad, that's all right." And with that, I felt true forgiveness. And at the time all this was going on, it was so very natural. But later on, my logical side kicked in, and I began questioning my own sanity. So I started doing some research and read in a book by medium Suzanne Northrup that children who cross over continue to grow up on the other side, which resonated so very strongly with me because it was exactly what I had experienced in my vision of Ryan. And that resonance led me to delve deeper, and I've been researching mysticism and the paranormal ever since, and spirits telling me, put it in book form and start talking about it. That's what your assignment is. And it's like, I trusted that's what I went ahead and did.
Well, we all have different assignments from spirit, and mine is world peace, with primarily with Princess Di and the issues of the Middle East. But, you know, this show is an expression of my assignment from spirit too, and I try to feature other people who are working with spirit. So, you know, that's a very sad story to start out with in your contact, but I do resonate largely with what you're saying, and it's usually relatives from the other side that first begin to give us the spirit contact, and then, you know, it may be that later sometime archangels or ascended masters or others step in to guide, and there are many different guides that we all have. It's just too bad that, well, of course, like myself, you know, I was raised Roman Catholic too, and we're told that the saints intervene, so it wasn't totally foreign to me when I began to hear from spirit, but we all have our different experiences, you know, and at the same time, they don't like mediumship, and I think the reason they don't like it is because we can directly communicate without the need of any priest or intercessor, and that cuts away a lot of the potential they have for income, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're taking the broker out of the picture, and you're communicating directly with God or spirit, and you
exactly.
don't need them anymore.
Yeah. So anyway, I've been reading so much of your book, and it's still so fresh in my mind, and there's just
Thank
so
you.
Much interest. But, you know, I got to get to the name thing, which is so weird, you know, because I'm Marcia McMahon. We're talking to Dennis T. McMahon here, and we go back somewhere to Ireland, obviously, and so I'll share what I know about the McMahon name, and you share what you know. Apparently, you've done a little bit of research with your daughter there, but I thought it was funny because we also belong to the a private group that a lot of people feel a connection to John Lennon's spirit, so I have to ask you about how you feel connected to John as well.
Sure. What would you like to go into first?
Well, whatever you feel like answering. You know, we'll talk
well, since
about
you brought up John, and I feel him here, actually, and I don't really consider myself a medium or a channel or anything like that, but I do feel connections to him at times, and the first time I was involved, actually, in a past life regression, literally a half a block away from the Dakota, and I'm in the middle of this regression, and you know how the thoughts are just coming, boom, 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 like before I can communicate to the person who's doing this with me, like 10 have passed me by, and I can only communicate one of those. But in the midst of all that, I had this, like, physically it did not resemble John Lennon, and it had an extraordinarily distinct Cockney-type accent, and he just kept going, "It's the next big thing, it's the next big thing." And I remembered that was something. I was always a Beatle fan. John was always my favorite. And I just remembered he would always say, you know, "You're looking for the next big thing." And it just hit me that it was him, you know. And so, you know, I had him come through then a couple of times through pictures. And it sounds silly and trite, but I'm going to say it anyway. I work in the West Village, West Greenwich Village in New York, and I often pass by where John used to live at 105 Bank Street. And I got to tell you, you know, it's hard to find parking spaces in Manhattan, but I always, not always, but very often find parking spaces. I just go to that area, and I feel like he's guiding me to that area, and I'm saying, can this be real? I mean, John Lennon doesn't have anything better to do than to guide me to parking spaces, and I really kind of doubt myself on that, because I never knew him in life, so it's very hard to get any kind of validation. But then one time, I'm parking the car, and I left it in gear as I stepped out, and the car starts pulling, going to crash, a brand new car is going to crash in the car in front of me, and I yelled out loud, I said, John, come on, help me here. And it was like I was able to step on the brake and avoid the crash, but in that moment, of panic, I just kind of called out to him, and it was like my deeper self coming forth, revealing to me that at my deeper level, I do kind of believe he's doing that, as ludicrous as it may sound.
Oh, I don't think it's ludicrous, but, you know, I have to humbly share, too, that, you know, in all this work I've been doing with John, and I'm writing a book called Notes with John, which is the summation of all the messages I've had from him over the last 5 or so years, but then also these lyrics. I've got 30 or 40 sets of lyrics now that I've written with Bob's songs, and not all of them are John's. Some of the songs belong to George, too, who's doing some really fantastic music, and we'll get to listen to George's, one of his new tunes at the end of the show today. But, you know, I've been, sometimes I go through the different phases in my life, and I'm kind of in a conundrum and a phase right now, and I'm ever humbled to get these personal messages from John that he's supporting me through all of this and so on. So, you know, he is a personal guide to, he says he works with many quote unquote enlightened souls. That was part of his message today that I read on air. And he does work with others. And, so the fact that he's a spirit guide to quite a few people and wants to continue the work he was doing on this plane for world peace, it's a two-way street when you work with spirit. I've been working hard to bring his music to the fore on our show and create this book, so it doesn't really surprise me that he's there for me, you know. And last week he came in with kind of what I would call a spiritual hug.
That's great.
Have one of those, you know. So
yeah.
He's guiding you, and I'm getting a confirmation that this is all true, and just relax and open your mind. He's saying, imagine that.
Relax and float downstream, I guess, right?
He's saying, imagine that. Imagine that, Dennis. You know. So anyway, you know, the thing is, doubt is normal and healthy, too. And if we didn't have doubt and skepticism, then when we do get the confirmations, we wouldn't get them so strongly, and so you can't have faith without doubt, et cetera, you know.
Yeah, you were brought up Roman Catholic, and I guess you remember the story about doubting Thomas after Jesus had arisen from the dead, as it goes in the Bible. You know, Thomas wasn't there when he appeared to the apostles, and he didn't believe them until Jesus made a personal appearance to him. And so, you know, then he came to believe. But to me, that story validates what you're saying here, is that it's good to doubt. It's good to question, because I feel like, you know, if they want to get a message to me, it's going to have to be knockout, dead clear, you know? And that's...
I see you operate that way. I wondered if you happened to notice the email I sent you yesterday that said we open our show at 12:55.
Yes, I did. Yes, 55 because being my magic number. I write about that in the book.
55 is also my magic number.
Is that
I've
right?
I've never met anybody that has it. Well, it's 5554, which used to be my address
when
I was growing up.
That's three fives in a row.
Yeah, and I've got it throughout a bunch of other numbers that I'm not going to say what, but, you know, I've got it throughout everything that I have.
I had a whole bunch of them last night. We played a softball game. I was getting 55s all day, and we're playing this really great team. And we go into the fifth inning, and it's tied 5-5. And I said, are we really going to beat this team? And then one of my players had a kid with him, and he opens his umbrella, and I swear to you, on the umbrella it goes 5-5-5-5. I said, uh-oh, I think we're going to win this one. And sure enough, we did win it with a double play at the end. It was a fantastic game. But, you know, I have to get bombarded with these, or it doesn't sink into me. It's just the way I am. I don't know why. But, you know, unless I really feel it deeply, I tend to challenge it.
Uh-huh, yeah. Well, it's the way you've written about your magic numbers is really interesting, and I thought it was really strange that we both have the same magic number. And I haven't played the lottery in a long time, but one time years ago I played the lottery, and it was my first time, and then I found out later that I had won a part of it, but it was too late to do anything about it, you know, and I didn't follow up on it because but lucky numbers do help, and I think that sometimes, you know, people, well, it was Nick Bunick, actually, the author of The Messengers, that wrote about the 444s being a sign of the angels, and I usually get a lot of 444s, but particularly when I think we need encouragement, we'll see more of our lucky numbers out there kind of jumping out at us, the way you describe it in your book. But I want to talk about the last name, too, and what you know about the name McMahon, and I'll share what I know, and then, you know, we'll get into that a little bit, because this is all very interesting. Another coincidence, you might say.
Yeah, I got an email from my daughter Kristen this morning, and she said that the McMahons, I guess, date back, and I think you had said this too, to Celtic times, and she says there are two clans of McMahon, and it's also spelled MacMahon, MacMahon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how.
And one clan originated in County Clare, where they held the seat of royalty since ancient times, and legend has it that those McMahons were direct descendants of Brian Boru, B-O-R-U, one of Ireland's most famous kings.
Is how it's re-spelled.
Oh, okay.
And then that's where I got the connection to O'Brien. Did you get that email about that?
Yeah, and in my novel, Street Fighting Man, I just happened to choose the prototype was Kevin O'Brien. You know, it's a bit of a roman à clef. I'd say about 70% of it is real, but 30% is fiction. But I won't say what's real and what's fiction, but that name was fiction. But it was funny that I picked that name, Kevin O'Brien, because it's,
yeah,
you know.
Well, as I was saying in my email, anyway, the O'Byrne and McMahon were all part of one family, and then as they would become sons of, they would use the O to stand for son of or the Mac to stand for son of.
Oh, okay.
And that's how the Celtic language developed the Mac and the O, because we're all a Mac and an O if we're from Ireland, you know.
Right.
But the truth is that Brian O'Byrne is the first historical recorded king of Ireland. So the McMahons descend directly from him, and I believe that is going back to pre-Celtic, or, you know, almost before written language. I don't know exactly the date of when he lived in Ireland, maybe 800 AD or something like that, or maybe it's even Celtic times. I'm not exactly sure on the dates, but it's way before the 1700s, I know that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I really don't go far back at all in my own knowledge, because my father was brought up an orphan, and his father was killed, as legend has it, in the bootlegging days in the 1920s. He was shot dead in the street, and so my father ended up in an orphanage, because in those days they didn't have welfare, and what the Roman Catholics did was often turn over the kids to the orphanage. So he grew up in the orphanage. I never knew my paternal grandfather or grandmother. So my daughter Kristen is very interested in this stuff, and she's researching it for us. And to say that I contribute is probably not very accurate, because all I do is read what she said.
Well, yeah, that's fine. I mean, you know, I've got different people in my family. I used to be interested in it when I was about 18 or so, and I interviewed a lot of people at nursing homes to get more info. But all of us as Irish people get to a point where we get to a roadblock in our lineage because of the different persecutions that were going on in Ireland during the and prior to the potato famine, so that so many of the parishes would be totally burned down, you know, and that's why we can't, it's very hard to get anything beyond a certain time going all the way back. Like, to prove a pedigree of McMahon going all the way back to Brian O'Byrne is completely impossible, because so many of the Catholic parishes were burned by the English when they were persecuting Catholics and kind of, you know, doing that whole thing, you know. So, you know, it's an interesting history. And then when a lot of McMahons came over to the States, of course, and there's a lot of us now over here, and we're probably related somewhere back there. But you're saying that your grandfather, he was killed, so, or your great-grandfather was killed?
No, it would have been my grandfather.
Your grandfather was killed.
Right.
So you couldn't get you can't get too much more on that end of the family.
No, my daughter's researching his wife, my father's mother, my grandmother, and in those days, apparently, as my daughter is telling me, they used to like say whatever they had to say on their birth certificates to get into this country.
Yeah.
So you don't know if the information is valid or not. So she's looking deeper into that, and she also brought up this DNA surname project. Have you heard about this?
I certainly have. My uncle's into that.
And is it worth anything? I know they charge $148.
I
guess you send them a piece of blood and they do some research for you.
I got an uncle that, he's really a character, Uncle Duke, and he's just a fantastic guy. But he basically is paying to have this done, and he goes to Ireland every year. He's very well-to-do, and he goes back over there and stays in castles, and he has a whole clan of people, so it means a lot to him to get this done, and he's looking into it. So if he gets back with me an email, he told everybody an email a year ago that he was going to do this DNA thing, but I don't know whether it's worth the money to have that done or not. You know, I've seen a lot of these things with Irish lineages, and all the Irish people want their lineage to be known, but like I say, I've been over to Ireland, and even when you go over and you try to find things out, you only get so far because a lot of the records have been destroyed. So it might be worth it if it's worth it to you. I mean,
yeah, roll the dice.
Would say
I think
ask
so.
Your spirit guides, you know.
Yeah, just roll the dice.
Or roll the dice. Depending on how great your desire is for that, maybe your daughter's more interested. But
she is. She is. But I could go for the $148. No big deal, you know.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, good. So anyway, getting back into the mystic. I'm just, you know, there's so much to cover in your book, and all of it was fun. I thought your descriptions of going to the shamanic circles in New York were really cool, and I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your first experiences with that, and then I want to talk about reincarnation, too, because I thought that was really cool.
Okay, just to set the background on it, shamanism is an ancient spiritual practice that predates all of the organized religions now being practiced on Earth. I think the archaeological evidence says it goes back some 30,000 years.
And in
indigenous
yeah.
societies, the shaman is the member of the tribe who can enter into that expanded state of awareness and journey to the spirit world on behalf of others to help them with health issues or resolve practical matters. And what shamanists believe is that there are benevolent helping spirits, including, I would add in our own terminology, saints and guardian angels, who are standing by ready to help us, but the protocol is for us to ask. So in Greenwich Village, there is the New York Shamanic Circle, and the woman I told you about before, who I identify as Dawn in my book, she encouraged me to get into shamanism, and it really resonated with me. And I went to the circle, and you just kind of go through these very simple rituals and of passing around a candle, saying your name, they burn some sage, and you cleanse your spirit, this kind of thing. And you just kind of go into a shamanic journey, which involves a drum beat at about 5 or 8 beats a second. And if you listen to the drum beat, your brain, and this has been proven scientifically, starts to calibrate to the sound and fire electrically at about 5 to 8 cycles per second. And that's a trance state. That's the theta mm-hmm. brain state. So once you get into that state, you are open to spirit. It's just like that twilight time when you're first waking up and you connect. And so I had some experiences there. And the first, what I love about shamanism is that for me and a lot of other people, you can get it instantly. You know, it's not like meditation. You got to become a master, or yoga. You got to do it for so many years. This was like, boom. It's like we have this program in our DNA, and you listen to the drum and you just get into it, and it just takes you back to wherever 30,000 years ago. And I met a power animal, I met a spirit guide, and it was just a fantastic experience.
Yeah, and I think that spirit actually, I connect spirit differently through meditation, but I confirm what you're saying, and I teach art history, so I think the idea is all there with the ideas of the animals and you know, the connections that we have to Mother Earth and Spirit should be a unified whole experience. And I've not attended a shamanic circle, but I'd be perfectly open. But, you know, I don't live in a place like New York where things like that are happening. In fact, I'm out in corn and bean country and in farmland of Illinois, so there isn't much at work with spirit going on, and I host a small ascension study group here, and that's about all we do. But we do connect with the spirit realm, and it is easy to connect with the spirit realm. A lot of people don't know that. So I thought that was great, the way you described that. And you mentioned Dawn, and I think you have a very unique story to tell with your sessions with Dawn, and she introduced you to the shamanic circle and the beauty that that has unfolded in your life. And then I thought it was really interesting the way you started to discover your past lives, and you were doing regression. And I've been doing some regression too, so I'm curious, and I may want to share a little bit of my experience, but I'd like you to share your experience on what I guess was the most important part of it. And you kind of discovered that you know, you had a family, another family tie to another person.
Let me just go back a little bit. You know, there's a shamanic attitude that we should be grateful even for our afflictions, because they are opportunities for growth. And somewhere along the line, I'm not exactly sure where, but it may have been when I was thrown into solitary confinement while on an LSD trip, became claustrophobic, okay? And this claustrophobia just kind of like, it didn't happen originally, but it just kept going and going and going. I went to like five or six therapists. I couldn't find anybody to really help me. And then I flashed back to when I was 5 years old, and it was at that time that I saw this picture of my Uncle Buster, and I said, that's me. At 5 years old, I recognized that that was me reincarnated, but I had never at 5 years old heard of the concept of reincarnation. So my theory became that maybe the claustrophobia, because they say if you know where it's coming from, you can get past it. I thought I knew where it was coming from, but I wasn't getting past it, so I thought maybe it was coming from somewhere else. And Buster, I knew, had died in World War II as a bombardier in the final days of the war against Japan. Mm-hmm. And he went down. I said, well, maybe if he went down with the plane, he died in that claustrophobic condition. If I was him, maybe that got retained somehow into my next life. So I sought out Dawn, who, you know, was one of the people approved by Brian Wise, who is the past life regression guru. Suzanne Northrup also recommended her, so she came extremely highly recommended. I went with her. We did the past life regression, and it came through so clear that I was indeed him. But my spirit helpers, and I did two regressions with Dawn, and she kept saying to me, you have to go through the moment of death. You have to go through the moment of death. And my spirit helpers would not let me go through that moment. He was alive, and then he was dead, and I was a soul floating in and out of his body, but I never really experienced the moment of death. I'm not sure why. But it became clear from those past life regressions, you know, to the extent that you can prove it, in quotes, to yourself at least, and I have proven it to myself because it resonates so clearly, that I was my Uncle Buster in a previous life. Now, my Uncle Buster happened to be also, Buster McIntosh was a half-brother of my father, Bernard McMahon, and also my mother's first husband. So, you know, I did some research on reincarnation after that, and it seems to be widely accepted that if we have successful incarnations with certain people, we will tend to incarnate with them over and over and over again, because the idea is that you can grow with them from a soul growth perspective. And so, you know, today, like last time I was my mother's husband, this time I'm my mother's son, you know, so.
Exactly. Oh, I found that to be true, because I started looking into my past lives last summer, and I was moved to call on one of Carolyn Everett's radio shows. She's a wonderful channel for spirit and a dear friend of mine from many years ago, and she does readings on air like I do, but I haven't done readings in a long time. I feel that they kind of interfere with our guests, and so I don't get into them that much, but I'm going to be opening up to doing some all-reading shows coming up. But anyway, I called in, and she said that there were some people on one of her conference calls that had a past life with Jesus, and I felt like I should call for some reason that day, and then she put me back into that time period, and I imagined that I was talking with him and everything, and she gave me a message from him, from that lifetime. And then I thought, now I really have to go for past life regression. I have to find out, you know. So I did my past life regression last summer. I started it with this fantastic psychologist guy that he's got all the credentials, which I like because I'm a credentialed person too. And he's a member of a spiritualist church, which I attend to, and he's always open to spirit. And sure enough, I found out that I was in this lifetime with Jesus, which, wow, you know, I mean, I never knew it all my life. I mean, I always felt very close to him. I was very religious most of my life, which helped me to open up to spirit, and I've been getting channeled messages from him for years, you know. And now I understand the closeness, you know. But the lifetime was really remarkable. And I understand that you also had a lifetime with Jesus, or that you say you walk with Jesus. That's pretty amazing, too. We've got a lot of similarities going in this talk today, Dennis.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I write about this in the book. And ironically, we were talking about the claustrophobia before. What it came out through that regression was that the claustrophobia that I had experienced was an outgrowth of that lifetime at around the same time as Jesus, according to this regression that I did. I admired him and tried to emulate him. I guess the Roman Catholics might have called us false prophets or false messiahs or something. I don't know if I saw myself that way or whatever, but I would preach. I had a following, and I would preach to the following. And I conveyed a message knowing it not to be 100% true, and some people were hurt by that, and for some reason, as a karmic punishment, I myself, as a soul, inflicted claustrophobia on myself and had worked through that in many lifetimes, but because of the drug abuse and being thrown into jail, it brought it back. It wasn't that that was the cause, it was just the reignition of that situation, because, you know, and I would recommend drugs to no one out there, you know, but, you know, in the
Absolutely.
60s we did it. It was a matter of course. You know, we would take pills like we would take an aspirin nowadays, you know, so, you know, that was back then. But, yeah, it was tied into the time of Jesus. And I don't know if you had this happen in your attendance at church, but did you have, Marcia, did you have kids who fainted during Stations of the Cross?
Did I remember that? No,
when you went to Stations of the Cross, did you go to Stations of the Cross as a kid?
I a couple times.
They forced us to go when I was in Catholic school, and I was a kid, like 2 years, it was my assignment. I would just faint. I couldn't take, you know, the first station, Jesus is condemned to death, and you're like, oh, God, here we go on this trip again. And by the eighth station, I'm like passed out. I couldn't handle it.
Well, you know, I emotionally identified with a lot of that, but I couldn't handle it either. And I would deliberately, I even worked for the church and was a teacher in a number of parochial schools throughout my 30-year teaching career. I've taught art all my life, you know. And in some instances, you know, they'd have these, you know, Good Friday things where you'd have to participate, and I wouldn't be able to do that. Even.
That was one of, those things. They were just so dreadfully depressing and horrifying.
So dang,
you know?
Depressing and terrifying, yeah. But I was very devoted, and I had a hard time. But I finally kind of liberated myself from all the Catholic theology when I read The Course in Miracles, which is a channeled book from the Spirit of Jesus. And it's a phenomenal book, but it gave me all kinds of other fears. And, oh, boy, I dare not even go into it. But I think, speaking of overcoming fears in this lifetime, there are certain fears that everybody has. It's not just you. It's not just me. We come in imprinted with them from previous lifetimes and from this lifetime. And it is our duty, of course, to ourselves to liberate us, to let our guides work with us. And I think you really illustrate so well in your book how your guides have been working with you on these various spheres to liberate you. And I think all the guides that we all have, and we have many guides, you know, as we're speaking here, I'm thinking of the listeners too, that they can benefit from reading your story of working on this sphere, because you've directly confronted, you have this thing about elevators. Tell us about that. And some of the stories you write about are just hilarious, like when you were going to get your test for some kind of MRI or something, and had to be an open standing MRI and all that. Did you go into that?
Actually, it was strange. I brought about a condition. I thought I had carpal tunnel syndrome or something, and so I was going to get that ruled out. And so they had this, what they call a stand-up MRI, and I go into this in detail in the book, but I just as an outline. Stand-up MRI, you didn't really stand up. You sat down. So I'm saying, why is this called a stand-up MRI instead of a sit-down MRI? But, you know, in Brooklyn, sit-down is like when the mafia kings meet and they try to work out their problems. So I guess that's why they didn't call it a sit-down MRI. So anyway, I get to this. So this is a place devoted to people who have a claustrophobic fear of the regular MRI. And I get there, and they force me to take an elevator down to the MRI. I'm saying, this is crazy, you know?
And you have this fear of elevators, so.
I don't like being on elevators. I don't like being in closed places where I can't get out. I don't mind if I'm crowded in, if I have an exit or a path of egress, and I could escape. But if you take that control away from me, and I know I'm in this dangling cube on a string, and you know, in the Empire State Building, I'm not very comfortable there. So anyway, I got into the elevator and I went down and I did the
emotion,
it was the slowest elevator.
I don't like enclosed spaces either. But I don't have a fear of elevators, but I've been stuck in them a few times, and that's no good.
Yeah, no, I've been stuck a couple of times, and it really is no good. And, you know, I talk about this a lot in the book, but, you know, it led me, this fear. And you know, it's kind of like John was saying, you know, you gotta essentially fight for peace. You know, there's something about the process. You may not bring it about, you know. We may not stop the war in Iraq. Okay, but there's something about you going up against that, doing what you can, speaking about it, singing about it, donating to whatever cause, you know. There's something about the process of standing up to it and doing the right thing. And that's with the claustrophobia, and I write this a number of times in the book, and I'm glad you find it funny because I did write it that way. But you stand up and you try to get through it, and you may not get through it 100%. I've made progress here and there, and spirituality has given me a couple of quantum leaps along the way in dealing with this claustrophobia, and I'm at a point now where I take elevators every day. I'm not that comfortable on them, you know, but I will do it. You know, in the past, I wouldn't go near them, and
mm-hmm,
you know,
yeah.
So, but again, like John was saying, you stand up for peace. You stand up to your own fears, and you try to
That's
work
right.
through them, and spirituality can help you with that.
I definitely agree, and I concur 100%, and I also feel that way about planes. I sometimes, right after September 11th, I couldn't even get myself on a plane, and I did some sessions with a healer, and she said that it was because I had been in some accident in some lifetime that I haven't even explored, you know. I haven't gone into that lifetime in my past lives, but that's one good reason for getting these past life regressions. The other thing is that the most amazing things comes out. I mean, I've taught art history, and I'm currently teaching it, and you know, I've always favored the Amarna period way back in Egypt, and I came to find out that I was living then and was the daughter of Nefertiti and Akhenaten. I mean, it's just so phenomenal. These past lives I have are so illustrious, you know. It's like, why? What am I doing in this one, you know? Big
yeah.
deal. But, you know, all of it adds up to learned experience, and all of it can enrich us. And I think that your path is I commend you for, you know, kind of also standing up for your truth in spite of your Brooklyn gang, you know, way of thinking. I liked and enjoyed all of the witticisms with what would the gang think of this. You know, it's a good read. We're almost at the time of ending our show, so if you have any final thoughts or anything else that you'd like to say about the book.
I would just say if people would want to visit my website, journeyintothemystic.com, you can read an excerpt of the book, a couple of chapters, read about me, you know, that kind of thing. It'd be great. I thank you so much, Marcia, for having me on your show.
Well, you know, it's great to know you, Dennis, and we got the same name out there, and we're putting you out on the radio, and we hope that our listeners, you know, visit your website at journeyintothemystic.com, and maybe we can even take some time and talk again sometime.
That'd
really
be great. It's been great talking to
you,
Marcia.
Dennis, and I wish you the very best in launching your book, and it's Into the Mystic by Dennis P. McMahon, and this is your show host, Marcia McMahon, as we are signing off for today. We're going to listen to some very special music called Welcome Poems, Country, or Welcome Poems if you don't have the country version. This is something we haven't played before by John Lennon. As we close out, we thank you for listening to The Peaceful Planet today. We have a very special guest coming up next week with Ed Mitchell. So don't miss that show, and thank you for listening. Please stay in touch, and many blessings to all.